Track 1. Oversized Pepper Pots.
Few could have predicted the dramatic changes that were about to take place in the Clay Cross area when George Stevenson and his secretary, Charles Binns, set off to find the best route for the 72-mile-long Derby to Leeds Railway in 1835. Today's two-mile journey, which will take at least 2 hours, will reveal how Clay Cross was built upon the ground beneath your feet, in more ways than one, and the memories of residents, which stretch as far back as the 1920s, will bring the fabric of the town's bricks and mortar to life. So why start the audio trail beside an oversized brick pepper pot? This is one of 11 shafts that Navis spent 2 years driving a mile-long tunnel directly below Clay Cross from 1837. It revealed several seams of good quality coal, oil and ironstone that George Stevenson was quick to exploit when he founded what would become the Clay Cross Company soon after. Rows of houses were rapidly erected to accommodate the rising workforce, and those who could not find lodgings lived in huts and shanties that were sprawled along the length of the tunnel and interspersed with beer houses. Within 10 years, the population had nearly tripled. Tunneling was a hazardous job. At least 10 workmen are known to have been killed, and likely many more during the tunnel's construction. In February 1838, William Bunting was killed when a truck fell down the shaft and hit him on the head. James Walker, a banksman, the man in charge of the shaft and cages at the colliery surface, fell down one of the shafts and was killed on the spot, as was Daniel Glinster, whose attention was distracted by a nearby fire. But this tunnel opened up the Midlands to the world, and for decades after, plumes of steam would billow up through these shafts into the town, as engines passed below.
Track 2. History set in stone.
The map on the left is designed to represent the area as it would have been before the tunnel was actually built and before the collieries were in the area. So just to describe what the area looked like as a rural village. And then the map on the right-hand side is taken from a much more recent period when the Clay Cross Company would have been in its heyday in the 1920s or 30s with a lot more activity. Which is obviously represented by what's going on the map.
Sculptor Peter Maris worked with the local community to create the artwork you can see around you.
And the map in the middle is a little bit more playful, and it's in quite an attractive slate from China Slate, as the other two are, and shows the area as it is now, but with the current development blanked out to represent kind of a building site as it has been for the last few months. And it's annotated with local children's drawings that were done by Homegate School largely. And I've been able to cut as line drawings, and so it makes it much more playful. And it represents also part of the consultation process, which did involve the children of the area.
Track 3. The Long Rows.
The long rows were built by the Clay Cross Company in 1840 and ran along either side of what is now Smithy Avenue. They provided homes for the rapidly rising population, as Jess Andrews, Margaret Woodhouse and Glynis Fern remember.
88 houses. Do you know what the first number was? 31 to 74. That's the top row. The bottom row, 75 to 118.
How come it started at
30? 31. I have no idea where that came about.
The house numbers followed on from the 30 houses that comprised the east and west tunnel rows, which we will also visit on this trail.
It were right nice. They were like two rows and got long gardens. No garden at front, because that's where you used to like have all your toilets and coal houses and all that. That were great. And then we used to all join together, all play sports together. We had some fantastic times at Long Row. We had two up and two down, and that was it. No bathrooms, enough there. Used to have timber. My mum had seven, so you had to share up and down beds.
Toe to toe.
Yeah. One slept that side, other slept that side. But there were great times. Great times. Better times than what you'll get now.
Because I remember taking rugs when I was younger for my mother. She used to always have a new peg rug every Christmas. My mother used to sharpen a peg and used to make hole and use all your coats and everything. All went into these lovely rugs.
Oh, that's why it's called a peg rug.
All nice patterned, lovely rugs they were. Mind you, they weren't very good when you were shaking them.
The promenade, to your right, was once known as the incline. Small trains used to haul groceries into town long before Tesco arrived. In fact, until early 2010, the supermarket site was a huge spoil tip that had blocked the view across town for 150 years. Doug Bradbury has fond childhood memories playing here.
We used to play on incline as kids years ago. They used to bring all the wagons up there to the goods yard. At the end in Market Street, there was a big warehouse, and all the fruit and veg used to come up there and be unloaded, you see. And we used to very often put coins on lines for the train to go over and try and make a penny, an eight into a penny and things like that, you know.
Track 4. The Board School.
Claycross Company built its own school. You've got a big bell tower, which is an Italian-style bell tower. It's called a campanile in Italy, and it has an open arched top where you could and a bell inside and a clock further down. It's also got a weather vane on the top, so it's all things. Just put everything on it.
Just below the fire escape, just here, where there's a set of steps, and as you can see, the doorway's been bricked up. That was the entrance to our classroom. A teacher named Mr. Jones, who were called Dej, used to stand on top at steps, and we'd be stood here. He'd have his arm out, and he'd line us all up, and until we were lined up, we didn't go in. You know, just stood here, like, brings back memories.
At the entrance to the school from Market Street end, there used to be a big old cannon standing there. This was a relic from the First World War.
You could sit on it. Nobody ever kept you off, you know. It was not to Germany, but it was brought from France and put there.
We had a school bobby who had an arm shot off in the First War. Children were very scared of him. He wore a bowler hat and had a walking stick for his good arm. The coat sleeve of his missing arm was stuck neatly into his side pocket. I never once played truant because of my fear of him.
Track 5. The Kino.
Here we are inside this shopping parade in Claycross, just off of Market Street and Air Street. And this is where the old Kino used to be, the picture place. Latterly, it was taken over by a guy named Owsley, who did motorbike repairs in. But for years, the balcony was still within the building. Though most of the other things had been taken out, the seats and everything else, the balcony remained until its demolition. If I'm not mistaken, most of the bricks in this parade are what, from the bricks on the original Kino.
Yes, there used to be a picture place. They used to call it Kino, up Market Street. We never went there because I think it had a bit of a reputation for being a bit itchy. So, no, we didn't bother that.
At one time, there were three picture houses, one at the top end of Market Street called the Kino, showing silent films. The audience used to sit on long wooden forms. There was a 20-minute serial which ended at an exciting point, so you would go to see the next episode.
It was known as a flip it, you know.
Yeah. My mother used to go, my dad when they were courting.
Do you remember how much it cost?
I think it was about fourpence, and if you went upstairs, you were really posh, you'd be sixpence to go upstairs. Yeah.
Track 6, Kenning Park.
George Kenning, a native of Claycross, donated this former colliery site to the town in 1931. From humble beginnings, he began to expand his father's hardware business by hiring out bicycles and horses to the oil companies, from whom he bought many of his supplies. Yet it was the appearance of a new vehicle on the country's roads, the motor car, that kick-started the multinational Kenning's car hire enterprise. When a soap company ran a competition with a car as the prize, George was determined to win it. The vehicle was to go to the person who sent in the greatest number of soap wrappers. As the young man was already selling the brand in his shop, he persuaded dealers and customers alike to part with thousands of wrappers at tuppence halfpenny a dozen, and so secured his first car. With an eye to business, he began to see great possibilities in the distribution and servicing of this new mode of transport. Look out for Kenning Street later in the trail. This was where the empire began.
Track 7. The High Street.
Until its demolition in 1968, East Tunnel Row stood on the High Street, running southwards from the elm tree towards the air shaft that you can see to your right, the tunnel's deepest. West Tunnel Row stood on this side of the road but was cleared in 1875 to make way for the Victoria Hotel, which is now the Doctor's Surgery. Next door is the original medical centre, the Claycross Company Colliery Hospital, built in 1864 and one of the earliest of its kind. It was emergency services of another kind that wrongly dealt with Henry Holmes.
Claycross was well known for the bunny run at the weekends. Lads and lasses came in from neighbouring villages and walked the length of our street chatting one another up and congregating inside shop doors. The police were always on the beat and moving people on. One particular incident was when two of my friends and I arrived in the town by bus. We walked across the road into a sweet shop and bought some sweets, stood inside the shop door, and almost instantly two policemen came to us and said they had already moved us earlier. They took our names and addresses, and the following week we had to appear in the court to be made an example of. We were let off with 4 shillings each for the cost of court. So I have a criminal record.
Track 8. St. Bartholomew's Church.
F.E. Dwelly's A History of the Ecclesiastical Parish of Claycross paints a rather sombre view of life in the mid-1800s. The first burial in the consecrated churchyard, that of Mary Ann Cowlishaw, had taken place on the 5th of February, 1851. Less than 30 years later, the churchyard was closed. During this period, the death rate had been appallingly high, especially among infants. The parish magazine of the time remarked, "Passing bell was out no less than 16 times during the past month." From Advent 1867 to 1868, it is recorded that 88 parishioners were interred in the churchyard. Between 1874 and 1875, 133 parishioners were buried. But this churchyard is not just a resting place for the many people who died in the second half of the 19th century. The rather innocuous-looking lump of rock, situated between the war memorial and the entrance to the church, is reputed to be the base of a cross from which the town takes its name. It is claimed that early Christians erected it on a pilgrimage, after which time it spent a few centuries as a mere building block in a stable, before being transferred here by George Griffin.
Track 9, Cellar Row.
During the second half of the 1800s, and well into the 1900s, rows of houses lined the High Street. Today, only flowerbeds mark the location of Cellar Row, as Peter Riggott and Glynis Fern recall.
Looking out towards Ashover Rock, you know, that was Cellar Row. That were all houses all the way down there. They were same as most of the other properties in Claycross. They were built for workers of Claycross Company. I suppose at that time of day, they were modern facilities. But when we look at it now, they were two up, two down, and they got backyard toilets. You walk down the yard to the toilets. If we were to turn the clock back and be stood now, we probably wouldn't see the hills in the background. All we would see would be a mucky row of houses.
And it was there where the train used to come, and it used to go underneath the houses. And I remember that if you hadn't got your bed, because in those days, Margaret, there wasn't fitted carpets, was there? It was all oilcloth. So your bed, you see, if you hadn't got something underneath it, it would go from one side of the bedroom into the other.
Track 10, Clay Lane.
The town's modest beginnings originate at this crossroads. At the start of the 19th century, the township of Clay Lane was purely agricultural. Only a few scattered stone buildings were to be found bordering the Roman road, Ricknill Street, which linked the military post of Little Chester with Chesterfield. When Stevenson's financial clout was able to exploit what local people already knew, that there was coal here in huge quantities, the population exploded, many working the 30 or so coal seams under their homes. The George and Dragon here is one of the few buildings that predates the building of the railway tunnel in 1837. Dating as far back as the 16th century, it is believed to have been converted into a pub during 1755, in anticipation of the traffic that was to be generated by the turnpike road that opened 2 years later. Just below this pub, down Clay Lane, was the site of the town's first school, the Stable School, which was originally built to stable the teams of horses that helped dig the tunnel. The name of Clay Cross wasn't officially adopted until 1935, and appears to owe its name to the long-established Clay family and a cross, the base of which was found at this junction and now resides in the churchyard.
Track 11, Broadleys.
And the left-hand side, going along Broadley from the right, was this cinema, the palace, and Kenning's big guy was at the bank. It was like a conglomeration of buildings, shops, weren't they?
Yes,
Scottish
yes.
Shops.
Kenning's had a massive garage and a petrol pump facility here. They used to have, I think it were either Bentleys or Rolls Royces in there. Nobody in Claycross could afford them. But that were their showroom, just to have these motor vehicles in. And as kids, we used to come and look and stand and gaze at them.
Yeah, I started in 57 in Kenning's with all old lads and, well, young lads as well and that. Our apprentice, fitter and mechanic, and it was bodywork more than anything, welding on damaging accident cars and lorries that we used to do. And then we used to go to our Tump breakdown lorry and fetch them all in different places.
You know, from him walking about with his horse and cart and selling paraffin and things like that, it grew into a great big multinational business. Well, I think what happened is same as what happens with a lot of multinational companies. You know, the names get changed and they prioritise, and then we'll sell that bit off and we'll sell this. And that's what happened.
Across the road from there was the New
Whipperdome,
that,
yeah.
Now that was really posh, wasn't it?
Oh, I knew it's brilliant, yeah.
They started off with stage.
Oh, yeah, stage, yeah.
Plays and thing done, you know, and because that cost you, if you went upstairs, it was one or two pence. But it was always full. Now, my dad played drums in there. My job from being about six or seven to help my dad take all his drums and things, and of course my dad used to let me stop, and then I sat on a lemonade box until the show was over, and then of course I'd got to start and help to take all.
Track 12, Charley Park.
Claycross Hall was built for Charles Binns, the general manager of the Claycross Company. It later became the home of the Jackson family, who took over the Claycross Company from 1871 until 1974. Charlie Park's first swimming baths weren't quite up to today's standards, as Peter Riggott, Henry Holmes and Doug Bradbury fondly remember.
Well, before Charlie Park Leisure Centre was built, we used to go swimming in a tin-up, basically.
You had to kneel along the side of the bath, and the chap that was running it, the instructor, and he used to come and pull your legs from under you in the water you went. You went right under.
You used to have fourpence as a rule, threepence to go in, and a penny for OXO in welfare. When you come out, you used to have an OXO, a meat to drink. And things were a bit rough. We had no baths or anything like that at home. And very often Mum used to say, you know, get a bath while you're here. And they used to slip you a bar of soap. You know, you put it in your trunk. So you think, all these lads from Long Rose are big lads, like, you know. They've got a bar of fairy in the trunks, haven't they? Like, you know, get it 4 foot end and have a bit of a swill round, like, and then swim off before the sun's got to. It makes you wonder how still it was like getting a fridge. Yeah, there's no eating.
The park played host to the annual show, including the flower show that, in its day, rivalled Chelsea. Crowds from across the country would descend from Claycross Station almost a mile away during the second week in August, Wakes Week. And the final night would always end with a spectacular firework display.
Track 13, The Claycross Company.
Founded in 1837 with George Stephenson as chairman, the Claycross Company quickly made a name for itself, and its products became known in almost every country in the world. It is open to debate about how much direct input George Stephenson had in the life of Claycross, but on his death in 1848, his only son succeeded him. Robert took a great interest in social affairs, and it was largely due to his efforts and those of Sir William Jackson, his successor as chairman, that the company built and maintained schools and 600 houses in the district. Whilst not all of them survive today, there can be no doubt that the Claycross Company has left an indelible mark on this town. Only time will tell if anything else will have such a lasting legacy. Did you enjoy the audio trail? Is there something we've missed? Please leave any feedback you have at audiotrails.co.uk.